What's up? What's up? What's up? Another episode of Poppin' Politics. And we're able to get on child development a little bit, something that I know we've been seeing a couple just a couple videos on Facebook, and you see kids out all the time acting crazy, little kids on leashes, all that good stuff. So we're gonna touch a little bit on that. I got two real professionals with me, and I'm really happy to have them with me. They got to join me. I don't know if they cousins, they got matching last names, but we gonna see. Maybe they got a little family history matching. But we got Bressa and Latifah. But I'm gonna let them introduce themselves. Bressa, go ahead.
Oh, hello, everyone. My name is Floressa Wilson, as you stated originally, but sometimes you hear him refer to me as Flo, and that's all good also. But I'm receiving my master's in clinical psychology, but I love to concentrate on the mother-daughter relationships, especially on those in the developmental realm, starting from childhood all the way up to adulthood. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Quentin.
Anytime, anytime. And we also have Latitris.
Hi, everyone. My name is Latitris Wilson. Like he said, you can refer to me as TT. I have a bachelor's degree in child development and a master's of science degree in human development and family studies. So I focus more on like the family dynamics and the lifespan development of humans from birth to death.
Y'all so professional. I'm so grateful. Y'all humble me so much.
Here you go.
Really, I saw this video on Facebook about this little girl. She couldn't be no older than probably like 2-3 years old, acting a fool in class. But it wasn't the fact that she was wilding. It was like that everything was so intentional. You know, it was like a little grown person throwing a fit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, like somebody just got fired from their job. It just went knocked everything down. And it was crazy to me because, I mean, I got a little 8-year-old, and, I mean, I wouldn't even know how to react to see that recording and it be my child, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that the teacher recording it or somebody that's in the class, I don't know, but it was just really trippy. And the thing about it is, so I saw it when it was posted originally. Mm-hmm. It was posted originally by the father. The father posted it and was like something about his little princess got upset or something like that, and then he was like, and then he was kind of more like along the lines of kind of just defending it and being like, don't tell me how to, like, it's like, wow, bro, you don't think this is a problem?
And that's the part that usually gets me the most, though, when the parent, like, defends the behavior. But it puts me in the mind to think that maybe the parent themselves don't really understand what is good parenting and what is actually good behavior, you know? It made me think about how they actually behave themselves when they get upset. Because you don't just learn that behavior anywhere. You know, like, it has to be cultivated in a sense. And on the other half, they have to actually see someone else do it and then duplicate it. And oftentimes they do defend, you know, that maladaptive behavior. But in all actuality, it's like it's putting the child in a place to where they won't be able to form no relationships with anybody. They can form them, but they may not be viable. And then that day, like, that's, we're saying that's what make you be able to even have a job, you know, those soft skills, you being able to just say, you know, say hello to people in the morning and being able to control your anger in a split second without getting, like, ultimately, like, you know, outrageously mad. Those soft skills is what people are hiring for, you know, and if you can't exhibit that type of behavior, then you ultimately don't get jobs, i.e. you don't eat, and then you got more stress. You got more stress because you can't get a job. Like, that matters, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, so just looking at the Facebook comments of the child's behavior, I believe you know, like Flo was saying, it's more of like a learned behavior because she's maybe 2 to 4, I can say. I mean, you know, it's hard for a child to control their emotions, you know, but she's able to like communicate saying, you know, I don't want this or no, or whatever is going on. So for her to act in that way, in that matter, something else is going on. I don't believe in children having anger management problems, especially at that young age, at the, you know, toddler age, 2 to 4. I don't believe in children having anger management or anything like that. And I just view in the comments, a lot of people like spank, 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 whoop, whoop, whoop. I would have beat her. I would have whooped her, whatever. But I feel like in that sense of her behavior, it's something bigger than just a spanking. I mean, you know what I'm saying? This is not something new. It just was recorded. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. So it just kind of made me feel like, okay, obviously, like going back to Flo said, she saw that behavior before, maybe at the home and logical system, you know, parenting, in the classroom or whatever the case is. But I mean, just looking at the behavior, I don't think a whooping would have solved the problem, because a spanking or whooping is just a quick fix to the problem. You know what I'm saying? Think about when she get older, you know, what's going to happen then? You spanking her, what's this going to do? She's going to end up, you know, fighting you, or, you know, whatever the case is, or hitting you back. You know what I'm saying? So,
can I ask a question?
Sure.
What did you say about you don't believe in anger management in a toddler age? What does that mean?
I don't believe, like, I mean, controlling their emotions, okay, that's one thing, but having an anger management problem at that young age, I don't believe children can have an anger management problem at that age. I mean, just working in different type of school settings and being a preschool teacher myself, you know, they always say, oh, he has an anger management problem, you have to do X, Y, Z. No, I don't believe in that. He don't have an anger management problem. It's more of what goes on at home. You know, yes, yes, yes. And then come to school, he wants yes, yes, yes. But at school, it's very structured. At home, it might not be structured. So he just can do, or she just can do whatever he or she wants to do. But going to a structured environment, you know, that kind of make children alter their behavior and emotions when they're not getting what they want.
Right. And they're not the focus of attention.
Mm-hmm.
That's deep. So I mean, see, because I've never really heard that outlook on it, to that children that young. So would that mean that anger issues are developed over time based on like situations, and then at some point in people's age it becomes anger?
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, anger in its essence is a secondary emotion. Like, you don't experience anger without feeling sadness or fear. So whichever those two feelings, whichever out of those two primaries a person is feeling initially, that's what manifests into the anger, and then you get the explosive behavior, right? But when you see that explosive behavior, it's like, number one, I think I said earlier, well, I stated previously, is that it's some form of empathy should be put inside the child. You know, like Eric Erickson, he has his A level or his A stages of development.
And my favorite. Yes.
Right? And he states, you know, that when you have a child who's very, you know, very young, number one, we know how the brain is developing, that by the time they're like 2 years old, the brain is already like 70% to 85% already developed, right?
But so see, that means it's just getting bigger for me. I didn't really know that. A lot of people don't really know those stages and stuff. With that, because it's like, you know, usually when people have kids, but parenting don't come with a manual. And a lot of people, while you guys are professionals and you guys have, you know, studied and all this stuff, a lot of people haven't. You know, like, they don't give you a pamphlet like, hey, here's what to expect.
You right about that.
Stages of development. Take that with you. You know what I'm saying? So people are kind of coming at it, and, you know, all you have is your experiences and really what your parents say, or what your grandma say, or what your auntie or whoever is that older person in your life. You know what I'm saying? If you have that.
if you have that. So, well, I can give a little quick synopsis of the brain and how that's maybe developing at that age, all right? So with that being said, when the baby is first born, right, mm-hmm. the brain is already developed to a certain extent. So by the age of two, it's around about 75-85% totally developed, right? Hmm. So with that being said, the portion of the brain that develops first is the portion of the brain towards the back. We call that the reptilian brain. And back there holds like the limbic system. And in the limbic system, it has the amygdala. In the amygdala, it has your emotions, right?
Okay, your emotions develop first.
There we go. Your emotions develop first. So that's why children are highly emotional, or most people are really, really emotional, really sporadic in their behavior until they get around about maybe about 23 up to 25. Now they say that at 25, that's when the brain fully develops, and that's when your frontal lobe has developed also. That's when they say fully developed. Your frontal lobe has come in, and that's your executive functioning, your impulse control, your attention, you know, behaviors and things like that all sit in the frontal lobe. So basically, they are highly emotional because that's the part of the brain that is already fully developed coming out the womb, right? And Erickson, on his first level of development, is called trust versus mistrust. Now, that trust versus mistrust is happening from in the womb as like their fetus all the way until they're actually born through infancy, right? I think they probably stop at around like, they say like 18 months. But basically, that's just saying that when the baby cries, the mama responds to it quickly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The baby already know, if I give out this one particular cry that makes this noise, my mama gonna come and change my diaper. If I give out this particular cry that makes that noise, then she gonna come feed me. Now, some mamas don't really get that down, how you were saying initially. They don't really know what to do, right? So let's say the baby is giving a more high-pitched cry. That's saying, yo, I'm hungry, but the mama come and change the diaper. Now they feel like, yo, wait, I can't trust this world because I need this particular need to be met and it's not being met. Or, you know, the baby a cry, a more low-tone cry, saying that, yo, I need my diaper changed, and the mama come try to feed it. And it's like, no, that's not what I need you to do right now, right? So then from infancy, you've ultimately created this being that in their brain is coded, yo, I can't trust this place that I'm in because it don't do what I need done for me when I need it done for me the right way.
And that's the only form of communication.
There we go, right? So now when we get somebody that's older, they're around 3-4 years old, stuff like that, they don't really know how to signal, hey, I need this from you. Because when I tried to do it the way that I knew how to do it, you didn't respond to me right. So now I'm going to do it in this type of way that I know going to get a reaction out of you. It's all about the reaction. I need to get a reaction out of you. So when I try to do it nicely, you didn't react to me right. So now I'm going to give it to you on the other side and I'm going to get you to dance. That's more or less what it is. And it's all encoded in the brain as far as how we react to them. It's not them, you know, having some more outlandish behavior. It's they are trying to figure out how to communicate with the world. Mm-hmm. And if we don't give it to them, if we talk about the 30 million word gap, right?
That is What's that?
The 30 million word gap was a study that was done, I want to say, by Hart and Risley in like the early 2000s. And basically what they found out in that study was that children from lower socioeconomic statuses will hear 30 million less words by the age of 3 than children from higher socioeconomic statuses.
What?
By the age of 3 years old, okay? So at the time when their brain is firing the most neurons and is learning as much as possible, the kids in the hood, you feel me, basically, or in the ghetto, you feel me, like those who socioeconomic status, we're gonna just define that, and that's just basically the job position that you work, the amount of money that you get paid at that job, and your level of education. Right. So we talking about babies who being born to parents with high school diplomas or less,
right?
Right. So we take those kids. they hearing 30 million less words, right, than those of parents who probably got an AA degree on up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So now, my bad. I'm just running on.
Oh, no. It's all good. I mean, does that mean that they just have less options to communicate?
Yes. So because I can't communicate like regular people as far as using my words. If we go back to that other video that you sent us, right? With the young boy in the store, and they were telling the mother that she couldn't come in the store with her young son because he was just ravishing the store, right? Mm-hmm. How did he react? He was like, shut the F up or something. He didn't say leave me alone or you're scaring me. He said shut the F up.
Right? Which is something he heard in his ecological system or in his environment. Yes. Something he heard.
And he's hearing that continuously. Closest
thing to what he was feeling. It wasn't, man, that's really unfair. I don't You know, it's like nigga, shut up, nigga.
Exactly. You know, and you're like, wait, no, you're not supposed to react like that. But Pete, though, there was a study that came out of, I want to say, Georgetown. It was Georgetown something. It was a lady, Jamila Blake, and maybe like two other of her colleagues. Jamila Blake is a PhD professor over at Texas A&M University. And they talked about it's called like girlhood interrupted. It talks about adultification, right? And they're defining adultification as basically Black girls being categorized as older and penalized, right? More intensely than their white counterparts. So Black girls automatically think that they more grown and everything like that. They talking about that people are even equating Black girl behavior with Black woman behavior. Like, how can you equate the behavior of a 5-year-old to a 35-year-old? But they stand as
because of their attitudes. Exactly. Yeah, they talking about their attitudes.
They saying that they loud and they boisterous, and you know they what they say, they're really independent and they're dominant. So because these babies are coming out like that, they're saying, oh, you know what? We automatically think that you grown. So because we think you grown, then we gonna penalize you harder, right? We gonna be more intense, i.e. that little boy, you just can't come back in here. Not the fact that he 4 or 5 years old and babies gonna do what babies do, but the fact that that's a grown Black man right there. Like,
right,
no.
Acting a fool in here.
He's 4.
And I think that a lot of this stuff that we talking about, even though we're talking about children, a lot of things that you said, I think I could name adults that I know act the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Don't get what you want. Oh, you don't react like this, then I'm gonna act a fool. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A lot of times where I think about like friends that I have, situations that maybe not even just me, but other people have been in, especially like growing up in the town and stuff, where you see girl, you know, slashing ties and all this stuff. It's like, but you don't know how to communicate what's really going on.
How you really feeling, you know? And then it's like almost like drowning inside. But you made a good point, though. You say how adults, you see some adults who already behave like that, right? But that goes back to what was stated previously, that the brain is already about 85% developed by 2 years old. So that means if you're not putting what they need, whatever you're putting in that brain from 0 to 6 years old, that's who they are. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want that outlandish behavior, you cannot put them in it at that age because the brain just get bigger, right? So that means everything that we put in it from 0 to 6, every curse word, every dance move, every word we don't tell them, every bird we don't point out, every color we do not name, they are missing that. Every question.
And children soak up everything. They are like sponges. They soak everything.
Everything, right? So whatever it is in that environment, they say, you can even be laying in the bed with your baby at midnight and you watching like some I hate to say, let's say you're watching like Love and Hip Hop or something like that, where the females, they loud, they yelling, they screaming, they throwing stuff. If you showing your baby that in the middle of the night, because let's think about it like this. How many children are literally going to bed before 10 o'clock?
I mean, I push a hard line on that.
of course. But let's talk about on average from what we've experienced from friends and things like that.
Young parents.
How often are these babies going to bed before midnight?
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Because I mean,
think about these children's nutrition, though.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, what did you say?
I would say, I'm just thinking about just how she said, think about these children going to bed before midnight. Think about their nutritional diet at home. I mean, most of these children in the low-income area, poverty-stricken areas, you know, their moms are in government assistance as far as, like, SNAP Ed, food stamps, whatever. Think about their nutrition. Like, they're not buying fresh fruit or fresh produce or anything like that. Mm-hmm. These children eat noodles for dinner. Yes. I'm sorry. Right. Noodles, hot dogs.
And cheese.
And sugar for breakfast.
Yeah. So think about their nutritional diet. You know what I'm saying? You have the, yeah.
And does that, and I mean, just, I know we bouncing around, but so does that tie into all to behavior and stuff like that as well? When we talk about nutrition, how much sleep they getting.
Definitely. Yes. All that goes hand in hand. Think about it. Think about how they have so many commercials. If you don't want to die from an early heart attack, make sure you work out at least 30 minutes a day. And make sure you get five fruits and you get four veggies and your protein and your dairy. And you will live a long life. Let's talk about that in development, right? The Black Panther Party. They were the first ones who started feeding the free breakfast program, right?
And because SNAP, real.
There we go. And the SNAP, right? Because they knew how vital nutrition was, especially in the morning, to get the body going. The brain needs its fuel. If you don't put gas in your car, it's not gonna go. Now let's take a premium car that needs 91, 93 gas, and you put an 89 in it, right?
That's you ain't going nowhere.
Right. You're not going nowhere. You get what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Or you're going to blow up your engine. And that's what usually happens. We put this bad food in them. But see, we can't always, I won't always totally say that it's all the way on the parent also.
I mean, because when we talk about nutrition, it's not. I probably never told nobody in none of my podcasts, but along with a history degree, I also have studied urban planning.
Mm-hmm.
And where we were focusing on stuff like food deserts.
There we go.
And especially in low income areas where they don't have access to fresh food. And that's just what it is. You really think about it.
Yeah.
When I stay in East Oakland, right? I stay on 35th First, the closest grocery store, High Street. In MacArthur. We had a car. So it's cool. We going to the grocery store. But other people didn't really, you know,
they shopping at the corner store. It's the corner store.
If you want something to eat, it's there.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You don't get your fruit from there, but maybe you just not getting fruit.
At all. You getting noodles, you getting hot dogs, you getting that dollar bread that has God's
bologna in it.
Bologna, American cheese, like you getting all, and then it's like when you look at the studies also when it comes to food deserts and things like that, they talking about those who live in areas that are considered food deserts, right? They usually have more access to fast food, and that's higher in carbohydrates, like higher in sugar.
Guess
what? And it's cheaper also. Exactly. Come over here and get this four for four. Now, if I got
99-cent nuggets.
Right? Mm-hmm. And if I have four kids and I'm a single parent and I work, because I only got a high school diploma or less, right? That go back to that socioeconomic status. Right. I have a high school diploma or less. I'm probably only making about $10, $12 an hour, if that.
On the good side. Especially if you stay in the South. You bought
right? I got all these bills to pay, and I'm still trying to make sure that my kids look halfway decent so that when they go to school, they don't get bullied and everything like that, right? Mm-hmm. I'm putting all this bad food into my kid, but I got to feed them at the end of the day. But guess what they said those foods are doing? Those foods are jumping on other, you know, little enzymes in the brain, other little transmitters that's saying, hey, give me more sugar, give me more sugar, give me more sugar, right? So now you got somebody that's literally just eating and eating and eating because they can't stop. Whether it's triggered by depression or it's triggered by stress, all this stuff is like going off in the brain. I know I may sound like I'm going all over the place, but literally this all is just, it all ties in. The food, you know? Mm-hmm. Like
it ties in.
Yeah. So it's a different type of sugar than if you get him a burger or if you give him a banana. You know what I mean?
And
those two different sugars are going to react differently in the body. And that's the difference between you getting diabetes and you're not getting diabetes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So do I really pay attention to their behavior or do I pay attention to making sure they survive?
I mean, and I mean, as a parent, survival comes first. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
I mean, and to be honest, it's like, you know, it's a struggle out here. You out here going to work, depending on where you work at. It might be traffic, hour and a half, 2 hours, got to pay the daycare. They got to go to school. They got to look decent. You got to have some kind of sanity about yourself. You know what I'm saying? After you put them to bed. So, but the thing is, that's crazy about it. Let's say you get home at 6-7 o'clock, right? The bed, bath, you ain't really got time. And I was just talking to another parent about that. When you working, and especially living in big cities, you ain't got all that time to be, how was your day? And this and that. I was just talking about it with my barber. Because it's like, when you working and you really trying to get to it to make sure that you provide, well, subsequently, you got less time. You got less time to bond with the child. You got less time to know how the day was going. You got less time to cook.
You
know what I'm saying? You got less time for everything. And then you still got to keep your sanity.
But you know what, though? One thing I am starting to recognize with that also, that comes down to time management. You know? Like, I can't totally say it's a can't, you know? It's more or less like a want, a lack in the tools. Because everything...
And work-life balance, also.
To survive, you gotta be able to adapt. You know what I mean? And that's like, I know you coming in late, but come on, mama, like, get you a crock pot or something and throw a meal off in the crock pot. And when, by the time you get home, it's already done for you. You know, let it cook on low. Like, some of these things we can do. Do it at nighttime. Get a system going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Sunday. Instead of just letting prep your meal.
Exactly. Instead of just like letting stuff run ragged.
Right.
Now, I'm saying that from two different point of views. Number one, I'm from East Oakland myself. You know, and my mother has four daughters. And, you know, for the most part of my life, I was in a two-parent household. But when it got to a place to where I wasn't, you know, mom and dad had broke up. And I was just, it was in our one-parent household. We had to step up big time for mama, you know? Mm-hmm. And they talk about that also in studies. They call it parentification, when a child has to step into the parents' you know, shoes and grow up faster than what they need to, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really a part of our culture also, that we have children and then our children end up helping us, you know,
with the struggles
parenting
alike.
The rest of the kids, you know? Really? Yeah, you feel what I'm saying? So then that kid end up lacking in a lot of things, not being able to play sports or not being able to enjoy their high school years because they got to take care of their siblings, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's almost like it has to be done, you know? Like, I don't see where it can't happen. I just feel that when it gets to a place that we are robbing that one kid that's helping so much of their childhood, then we got to kind of step back and say, all right, we got to make sure there's a balance here. You know, like, I know you helping me, thank you a lot, yada yada yada, but here, this is your day, y'all. The rest of y'all, leave her alone. Siblings, leave her alone. Let her do what she got to do. You know what I mean? Like, let her have her space. Let her go get her nails done, or let me pamper her and let her always know I love her. Thank you for those things. And that's what I think may be missing a lot of times, that the parents not giving the ones that's working hard the kudos. Like, you know what? I really see that you really just done took my space as mama, and I done took the space as daddy, and I'm working, and you in here managing these kids, you know, so I'm not gonna make it extra stress for you and still try to tell you, make sure you stay in a kid's place. Like, she can't.
Right. I mean, everyone likes a little bit of praise. From her.
Everyone likes a little bit of praise. Every now and then, you know, praise me, give me, you know, let me know that I'm appreciated, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, exactly. I agree. But going back to the initial video with the younger girl in the classroom, mm-hmm. The question is, why was she provoked, or what provoked her? Did the teacher provoke her so she can record a video? Did the teacher, you know what I'm saying, like, why was this child provoked, or what happened for this child to go on this rampage of destroying the classroom, right, and the teacher just sitting there recording her in a nonchalant type of manner? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to even say, I think that I don't know what happened, but seeing that reaction.
Yeah.
That reaction is not one that you get from an easygoing child. That's not a reaction that you get from a kid.
She's not.
You get what I'm saying? Like,
you
don't get no reaction like that from a kid that has been taught, you know, self-restraint, or how to, you know, how to do a quick
or self-regulate themselves. She didn't know how to self-regulate herself. She just out of power, out of control. But my question is, where are all the other kids at in the classroom? Why is she singled out, or what's going on?
That was, I want to get, to me, you know, well, where was everybody else? And I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like how, like Flo said, it seemed like that might not have been the first time, but at the same time, when you got people in seclusion and stuff like that, it does.
But then it's illegal. Like, you recording a child at school, like, you can't record a child at school. You know,
that's definitely breaking a whole bunch of HIPAA laws, right?
But I was thinking it was like more of like a, you know, like a child care system, or child care, where it's kind of like, you know, our people, you know, culture, you know, African-American type, you know, government assistant type, DHS type of daycare. That's what I was thinking.
But I'm not sure. I mean, like I said before, I had saw it originally posted from the father.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it said that the teacher sent it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he posted it for social media, and then it went viral.
Yeah. So there, that's, but you know what though, also too, that I'm really conflicted. Like, why did the parent think that that behavior somewhere is okay?
Right.
They don't think that that's bad behavior.
That wasn't the feeling.
He wasn't. He fought it. Like, how dare you say something? Yeah,
looking at his
compliments.
Yeah.
We do this, we do that for her. No, and apparently I'm thinking they're young. And they live in a different, you know, type of social economic status, as far as like low income or something along that line, because it's no way, like, huh? Like, I mean,
now listen, you want to know what's so crazy is that I actually raised that point once before. I said that there are certain behaviors that only belong to certain socioeconomic statuses, right?
Yes.
And I had a professor come back to me and throw a study in my face that basically said that no, it's not just in the African American community, it's in the Caucasian community also. But either way it go, if they poor or if they rich, if they don't teach their kids properly how to behave, that's what you're going to get.
That's what you're going to get.
Okay,
I thought about the kid in the second video. Because it's like, why? I mean, you see, like, when by the time the video goes on, you see the dude that's working at the store taking the stuff out the little boy hand and...
Aggressive.
This is your child, bruh. Like, what are you doing? Because it's like, she got him on some type of leash situation.
Like, she's crying.
She's crying.
Like, purse leash. I don't know if Michael Kors got like a new hookup to the bag. You knew your child was wild when you came in there, and you
survived. And she trying not to whoop him though, but you heard what she said. And if I whoop him, what's gonna happen to me?
Look, but
and
you
I felt it though.
But you gotta know how to regulate your child, because if you're if you're on them, if you own them regularly, then it's things that you could do without hitting them, especially
the look, the look, the count,
a look or whatever, or a firm talking to, hey man, look, you know what I'm saying? Like, to get that together so you could, at least for 5 minutes, so you could finish your transaction and y'all could go about your lives.
Mm-hmm. Hey, but you know what though? A lot of big things have been said in that last quick moment, right? Because it's like, number one, it goes back to, how can I say, that was the only, it seemed like that's the only way that she knew how to discipline exactly. was hit, you know? Mm-hmm. So you take away the only thing that I know how to do, because that's what they did to me. They hit on me, you know?
Yeah.
So her mama and them used to hit on her, so that's the way she know how to discipline. Now, you take hidden from her, now she don't know how to discipline no more, because that's the only thing she was taught. You know, like, on one side, I know I come from the hood also. So I know what's going on there. But on the other end, I've been educated. So yeah. I know other ways. You know, I know how to walk up on my nephew and say, hey, why are you crying like that? And he's like, I don't know. And I said, well, it's safe to say, if you don't know why you're crying, that maybe you can just stop. Like, I know that I can say that to a 4-year-old, because I know that their brains can pick up on it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to teach a kid a language, if you want to make your kid bilingual, teach them the language before they're 6 years old, and they'll never forget it. They can speak 3, 4, 5 languages. You know what I mean?
Right.
But give it to them before they're 6. But I know how to talk to them like that. A lot of these parents don't know that they can even talk to their kid like that. And ask them a question. You know, have you ever seen a black mama go at her baby and she'd be like, why you just do that, huh? Because you're stupid? Like, wait, do you know how frustrating that is for that kid, for you to ask them a question and then answer it?
and think about when the parent is like yelling at the children all the time. That's all they hear, their mom or dad yelling at them. They tune it out.
But you want to know why they tuning it out? Look, I just been reading a lot, but they tuning it out. They calling that type of behavior adverse childhood experience, right?
Yes.
They got this, and they got a list of pay, they got this survey, right? And mind you, that this stuff right here started right in San Francisco, California. This black lady got a clinic over there, and she's a pediatrician, and she says she recognizing that when these babies are coming into her clinic, that all of them are suffering from the same type of behavior, from the same type of reactions, right? So now she like, no, I need to see what's going on here. They come up with a scale talking about ACEs, the adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. What are the experiences? Let's say you had a parent that died, you know, a parent that died before you were the age of 12 or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. How many kids around here, literally, especially those from lower socioeconomic status, have parents that are dead? So we can check that off
right there,
right? Then if your parent yells a lot, right? Go ahead and check that off the list. Mm-hmm. Then, have you ever seen a dead body or things like that, right? Mm-hmm. Check that off. Have you ever seen your parent any type of domestic violence firsthand? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So, and they checking all this stuff down the list. You feel what I'm saying? And then with these adverse childhood experiences, they saying that it is changing the whole genetic makeup and the whole structure of these people, these babies' brains.
Mm. Yes, it is.
It's triggering like they fight or flight sense. So, you know, like, let's say you out in the wilderness and you see a bear, right?
Right.
Instantly, whether you can freeze, right?
Right.
Some people just take off running, or some people actually stop, think about what they're going to do, and then react, right? But either way it go, the way that reaction is happening because of something that's huge, it's frightening, and it's scary right then. They saying that these children who experiencing these adverse childhood experiences, they body doing that reaction every time the childhood experience pop up. So that means my mama yell a lot. As soon as she come in and start yelling, my brain is triggered as if it just seen a bear.
Mm-hmm.
You feel me? And that adrenaline is pumping in my body as if I just seen a bear. That's every time. So let's think about that. If I'm out here, how often will I be out in the wilderness and see a bear? Most people don't see one in their whole lifetime.
Right.
You know? So that fear response may not ever be triggered in somebody. But a kid who's experiencing those ACEs, that's being triggered in them continuously in a day.
Right.
Could you imagine that?
Think about like how these kids act with their peers. Think about the aggressive behavior that they display to their peers, the kids in the classroom with them.
Exactly. Remember I said, not even being able, you can't even forge no good relationship with nobody. Right. Soft skills, right? So now your kid become the outcast because you want to give them everything that you never had. But in the midst of you giving them everything that you never had, you're not giving them what you did get, and that is impulse control.
Love and care.
Nurturing, you know?
Nurturing, so yes, that's a big one.
We got to make sure that we get back to the basics. Because that behavior can be corrected, but it's corrected at the base. Teaching your babies how to share and not just saying, oh, that's hers, give her her stuff. No, the child needs to know how to share. How you expect for her or him to grow up and get married to somebody, have children and stuff, and then they end this tumultuous relationship always fighting because he can't share, nor neither can she. You know?
And that social interaction, that communication.
It matters. If you don't, and if we don't give it to them young, when they get older, we love. And then you want to know what's so wild to me is that I see so many women, and it's like they want to be loved so much. They just want to be in a relationship where they get this love, this ideal thought process of what they think love is. But then they get in a relationship and they can't compromise. And you got to give me what I want when I want it, or I'm finna flash and act stupid on you. And I don't care. I hit my man. No. Who wants to be with that all day? You going to make me have adverse childhood experiences in adulthood, too?
Right.
No, thank you.
And that's what's going on. A lot of people are in these situations that are toxic, are uncomfortable. You know what I'm saying? With people that have childhood issues. And I mean, and especially like you could speak to a lot of black men. A lot of times the type of women that you meet, or not even say the type of women, a lot of African-American women do have little childhood issues. And men too. Because I'm looking to do a podcast on man's mental health too, because our mental health is all different kinds of fucked up.
And
our inability to feel emotion, for us feeling emotion is not okay.
And you know that hurts my feelings. It hurts mine
too, because I'm a firm believer. A little boy can cry. He has emotions. He can cry. If he falls down and lifts his head, he's gonna cry. You better not cry. You better not cry. What do you mean you better not? He better not cry.
And then he get older and he putting his hands on that neck on the female. You feel me? Because he don't know how to express himself. And that hurts me because I've had a boyfriend from Oakland, you know? And I'm like, how did that make you feel when I did that? It'll make me feel like nothing. I don't. And I had to say, you know what? I got to be honest with you. You're a human being and I'm a human being also. And I know the emotions that I feel. So I know you feeling something, you know? Uh-huh. And it's worse when you just shut down and don't say anything. Uh-huh. Because now I don't know where I done messed up. I don't even know how I can even, you know, help you and say I'm sorry, because I don't know what I did. But then I start to think about it. I start to look back and I'd be like, well, okay, well, your mama, you ain't even lived up under your mama roof since you was like 16, right? And everything you did have, you got it from a female that was like 10 years, 12 years older than you. 16-year-old boy shacked up with a 20-something, 30-year-old female. You know what I mean? And it's like going around in this circle. So then you get with me. And I'm looking like, so how did that make you feel? And he's looking like, feel? I ain't never had to express no emotion to nobody. When I was 12 years old, I had loved this girl. She ain't like me no more. And I said, I'm gonna never love nobody ever again. I'm like, that's so dysfunctional. You holding on to stuff from 12 years old and now you in your 20s, my guy? Like, we gotta work on that. Y'all gotta feel safe to be able to say, but I can understand why y'all don't feel safe though. Because when y'all do open yourselves up, sometimes females do not take it properly.
Vulnerability, right? Vulnerability. You know, the woman will. Yeah.
She's gonna call you a sucker. She's gonna say, you know, you lame, or I like a rough dude. And it just looks like, honestly, yeah. I'm gonna peep on that she react like that because she herself don't know how to comfort you.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And but the thing about it is, in a lot of situations, and even when you deal with educated women, it's like, that's what it is. Because the idea of Black masculinity is such a big thing. And it may have to do with the fact that, you know, slavery and how they
oppression,
you know, just the mental manipulation that it takes to, you know what I'm saying, make a strong man feel small. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
In the end of the day, it's like, and I remember reading this, it's kind of like they wanted the Black man to be physically strong, but mentally weak.
Mentally weak, yes.
You know what I'm saying?
But that's why they used to break the man first, though.
Tough, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
But mentally, and they will... can't handle situations when it becomes too much. You always don't reply in aggression. But that way, you can't never get nothing done. It's a reason. Yeah. Because if you can't reason, then you can't negotiate.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So you can never really get the things that you want. Then you're always going to be in a bad situation. And you're going to always wonder why.
Hey, you want to know what's so cold, too? You want to know what's so cold? If you cannot, I'm going to take that statement. You said if you cannot reason, then you cannot do what?
Negotiate.
You can't negotiate. But also, you can't negotiate if you ain't got no words.
Right. True.
Right. You know that they measure intelligence by your ability to manipulate the English language.
Right.
Yes.
So if you can't express yourself, then you can't negotiate neither.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So then it goes right back to the beginning. Like, why are we in this perpetual circle of linear regression? Like, why are we going down, down, down? Because there is a cycle that's in place. And the cycle is starting from childhood, you know? It started from infancy. And we people just getting bigger. They getting bigger and bigger, and they still babies on the inside.
Yeah.
So how do we help cultivate that? Honestly, I think it's in the mama. I think it's in the mother. I think it's in the daughter. Because women have sons. And sons have daughters. And,
right.
You know, and it goes on in that circle. In the circle. And you want to know what's so crazy? I learned how to deal with men effectively by dealing with my daddy. Now, most women don't have daddies, you know? So, I mean, we got to figure out how we're going to get that done. But I learned how to deal with men by dealing with my daddy, you know? When it got to a point to where my daddy told me to stop, I stopped. You know what I mean? Most females keep going on their man when he be like, look, that's enough. They brains don't work like ours, you know?
Yeah.
So we can't just keep on popping at them, popping at them, because it's too much for their brains to handle. And we thinking that they shutting down, but in all actuality, they trying
to preach slow.
What's going on in their brain.
Yes. Growing with a, you know, single mom. My mom had three girls. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. And my dad has, I'm the youngest sibling of seven. And, you know, like, I don't communicate with my dad as often as I like. He don't support me in any of my career, you know, opportunities, education, or anything like that. So just growing up, or just going back to what you said, like, how to communicate when I'm in a relationship with a man, my emotions is totally different. I didn't grow up with a man in my household. My mom has three girls. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. It's a whole nother process, you know? And that's why I think that is really big that, you know, those of us who have went and got the education, and those of us who have, you know, went and learned exactly how it goes, that we make sure that we go back and we give this information, you know? Like, I know I do my little videos, I do, you know, Facebook videos, and you guys have no idea how many single mothers add me on a daily and just want to ask, how do I get my kid from stop doing this, because it's I want her to have everything, but you know, in the midst of me giving her everything, she gets meaner and her behavior gets worse, you know. And it's like, well, they need the structure. So I say that to say those of us that do know how it goes, and those of us who are functioning, having, you know, prosperous relationships and being able to dialogue with a man back and forth, all those things, we have to go back and teach the other women who don't know. Because if we don't, they not going to never get the information. You know? Like, just like how we talked about in the beginning, that trust versus mistrust, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about it, if you take that baby right then, right? And that mama does not efficiently and effectively support that baby, by the time that baby get 10, 12, it already don't trust nobody, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we put these babies and they grow up and now they 30 and they know, or they in their 20s, and they know that at this age, socially, this is what I do. I get in relationships with people. But I was never taught how to actually do this, right?
I was never told that I love you by my mom or my dad growing up in the household with a single parent or whatever. Her work-life balance did not, you know, go with my schedule. So she's working at night and we at home, you know, at night. She's working the night shift, the third shift. So, you know, not getting that affection that you need. Like you said, I never heard my mom say she loved me, but I knew she loved me by her actions. But it was never physically or verbally told to me. I'm sorry, verbally told to me that I love you. But her actions showed me that she loved me with the things she bought me and, you know, her cooking and cleaning, whatever the case is. But verbally, no.
And honestly speaking, that is something else also. Because it goes the mile when you hear somebody say, you know, I love you. Come here, give me a hug. Mm-hmm. You know, in the morning, when you first wake up, I'm trying to tell y'all, I will wake up in the morning and one of my sisters will be sitting at the foot of my bed and I look like you creepy. And she'll just say, you so pretty when you sleep. Oh my word. Most people will probably think that that's awkward. Do you know what that did for my self-esteem?
Right.
You know, for somebody to tell me that you beautiful even when you're not doing nothing. You know what I mean?
Right.
That I love this about you. Look at your eyes. Oh my word. Your voice so deep. And this, I ain't never heard no girl, no voice like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Let's get back to a place where we feel open and free about expressing what we love about others. And it don't make me lame or it don't make me a sucker that I can tell you, you know what? I like you just for you who you are. That's Carl Rogers with his positive regard, right?
Yeah.
They say Carl Rogers said something about positive. If I can give somebody, this is what he said. If I can give somebody positive regard, that means I care for you just because you are human. I love you just for being a person, right? If I can give them genuineness, that means that when I'm having a conversation with you, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to tell you exactly what I think or what I feel about what it is that's going on. When you come to me, you know for a fact I'm going to tell you the truth, right? If I can be truthful with you, if I can give you positive regard, and if I can just basically listen, you know what I mean? Be present in the conversation. I know for a fact that person that I'm talking to, they're going to feel comfortable with me and they ain't going to have no problem with expressing themselves. Mm-hmm. That's all he said. That's the main components to any relationship, to any conversation. To be truthful, to be present. Don't be distracted, but to be there. You get what I'm saying? And to just love on you just because of who you are. The Bible say that. That's agape love. I'm going to just love you because. You feel what I'm saying?
Yes.
If we get back to them roots right there, I think that we will see a huge, drastic change within our African-American community, honestly speaking.
Yeah. And our children,
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I feel like just teaching, not teaching parents how to be parents, but giving them some pointers, you know what I'm saying? While the baby is in their womb, you know what I'm saying? Giving the mother some type of support on how to do things, you know what I'm saying? Because a lot of parents don't even, a lot of parents don't even know, like, you know, breastfeeding, for example. Oh, girl, let me just smoke this cigarette right quick. But she's breastfeeding. Like, what? Like, right. That don't make sense. Like, you know, no, you're not drinking, so I'm not pumping and dumping, but a cigarette won't hurt. I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to smoke a little bit of it. Or just the secondhand smoke, smoking in the room with a infant. You know what I'm saying?
Or smoking wait, or in the go room. Deeper than that. They got third hand smoke that when you smoke in a room, that nicotine get inside of the couches and the carpets and stuff. And they sitting inside the couches and the carpet, they calling that third hand smoke. And they said third hand smoke is killing people more intensely than second hand smoke because it's just lingering.
Wow. I'm just thinking about the infant mortality rate. So
how African American women are the leading population. The leading low birth weight babies.
Right. Yeah. And I believe me and TT was having a conversation kind of like offhand, and we were talking about that same thing, just how a lot of these black babies, and you know, you wouldn't hear a lot about it, just black babies are dying young. And I actually know a couple people that have had these children, you know what I'm saying, where my homeboy excited about his child, juiced up, and the baby died, and it's crazy, because that, I mean, we were younger, and it's like, before we were 18, and I'm thinking in my head, like, wow, I've never heard of that before, you know? And you think just because you're not hearing about it, it don't exist.
Like, oh, yeah. Myth.
You know what I'm saying? These babies ain't dying like that, you know? Oh, yeah. Saying? But, I mean, it happens a lot in the African-American community. For what reason, I don't know. And maybe we all could kind of, you know.
I mean, I'm thinking about, like, the prenatal care that the mother is having, I mean, you know, have while the baby's in the womb. You know what I'm saying? The prenatal care, that's like a major component of, you know, you know, doing pregnancy, you know, your prenatal care, you know, as far as like your nutritional diet. What are you eating? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Most women, you know, while pregnant, eat, but are they eating the healthiest things or the, you know, the most things with the most nutrients in it?
Right.
No.
Right. But it's another thing about access, right? And and unfortunately, it's not unintentional. It's poor people don't have access to this stuff because that stuff is not put there. And it's kind of, it's not incentivized to be there.
No, it definitely is not.
You go into the hoodest of the hood areas, bro, they might have a corner store, but that ain't where you want to buy your fruit.
Okay, you know them fruits been looking like they was playing soccer with it or something.
You know what I'm saying? Ain't no Harris Teeter there. You know what I'm saying?
No, definitely ain't no Whole Foods. It's only definitely ain't no Whole Foods. And they got the best produce.
And that fruit and stuff like that, getting that's not no good. But one thing I can say this, though. Even though it's not there, if I go to my grandmother's house right now, 75 years old, right on 82nd and D Street. You look in her backyard, we grew up on fresh produce because we planted it. You feel what I'm saying? That self-sufficiency has to be present. No more can we say, because the white man didn't do it. Like, we got resources deep down within us that we choose not to tap into, you know? We are highly resourceful people. There is no way that you get a whole race of people who survive 400 years of a plague and it does not become a genocide. Let's just be honest.
Right. A genocide. Right?
If we look at
terrorism, institutionalized torture, though.
Come on.
Like, for real.
And it's so systematic.
Exactly.
So in somewhere in there, we have the genetic predisposition for survival.
Right.
So within that survival, we can begin to cultivate the more hierarchy of those genes. That means us getting out there and doing what we've been doing. Left from the cotton field, but we can start farming our own food.
Letting our children know that our food do not come from the grocery store.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's the agriculture. You know what I'm saying? Dirt made my lunch. You know what I'm saying? Right. Dirt made my lunch.
And then let the baby get out there with you and plant the seeds and do all that other stuff. So they learn exactly
what they have. That occupational therapy, man.
What's the old saying say? If I give you a fish, I'll feed you for the day. But if I teach you how to fish, I'll feed you for your life, right? Uh-huh. How do I sit back and I'm 27? I'm like, you know what? I need to plant me a garden. I'm going to put some cucumbers in there. I'm going to do this because that's what I know to do. Because uh-huh. I've seen that done in front of me. Because look, I don't want to eat, you know, all these GMOs and stuff like that. So I'm going to go and I'm going to get it done for myself. I'm not going to wait for nobody to do it for me. Because if I'm going to wait for you to do it, I may not never get it, you know? So I think that we need to go back to being a little bit more self-sufficient, you know? But one thing else I want to touch on also when it comes to our babies, especially the babies, you know, we talked about like prenatal care and things like that. They have a term called a secondary gain baby, right? Meaning that some of these babies are being bred or they being born or they even being kept because the mama trying to keep the daddy. She gonna get something from it, you know? Mm-hmm. So she may not really even want the baby. So that means when the man is paying her attention, then she makes sure she take her prenatal vitamins, make sure she eat well and stuff like that. But when he trickle off and go do something else, then she started to torture the baby by, let me go smoke, I go drink, he don't care about it, I don't care about it neither, right? So then you end up having a baby that you didn't really want and that's really undernourished and really undercared for only because you kept it just to keep the daddy or just to get public assistance or just to be able to get, you know, some attention from somebody, right? Uh-huh. So that secondary gain plays deeply in also our infant mortality rate, right? We ain't gonna act like SIDS is not real because SIDS is real. Yes. And that's a major contributor.
Sudden infant death.
Sudden infant death syndrome. Yes. Hmm.
And what's even that? What's that? Break it down.
Oh, sudden infant death syndrome. You want to take this one, T?
No, I'm listening.
Okay, sudden infant death syndrome is basically when your baby just instantly stops breathing. Nothing contributes to it, and you don't know why. Nothing contributes to it. Literally, they just stop breathing. It's not the way they laid in the bed. It's not, you know, if the parent didn't prop them up properly, they just stop breathing. I had a professor that her baby was in her arms and just stopped breathing. Yes, instantly, just stop breathing, turn blue on her quick, and they rushed the baby to the hospital, and they was able to revive the baby, but ever since then, she said she could never sleep. She just stood over the bed and watched it, but it just stopped breathing. Sudden infant death is something that is really, is strong, you know, and it's real, and sometimes you can't really, you know, stop why the baby died. We have no control over that, but sometimes we do, and that's making sure that we have, you know, good prenatal care, and we limit our teratogens, limit the stress that you experience and while you got the baby. Don't be worrying all day long about how you're going to get it done and what's going to happen next. You do need to know what's going to happen next, but if you worry too much, you mess around and have a miscarriage, or you just have a baby that's always stressed out.
Right.
They can feel it.
It is a real
thing. Their temperament.
That's something in the Black community that, I mean, we do all the time. Mama stressing, grandma stressing, daddy stressing, everybody stressing. Mm-hmm. And you fail to realize that it's a real thing.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Something that affects you in your everyday.
Yes.
Pessimism.
And then break down stress. What is stress? Let somebody know what it is. Stress is continuously thinking about something all day long.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, some people don't even know that they stress, and they think that they just pondering. Like, no, you stressing. Mm-hmm. If you thinking about that so intensely to where it gives you a headache, to where you can't sleep at night, mm-hmm. you stressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you losing your hair. Some people losing their hair,
or they
not eating, or they breaking out into these panic attacks. Where it's like the room starts spinning and they can't breathe and their chest start to cave in. They thought they having a heart attack. Do you know that if you look at the scales, that a heart attack and a panic attack basically have the same physical components? So that means you feel it in your head, you feel it in your chest, you feel the same place that you will feel a heart attack, you will feel in a panic attack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is
anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm. Anxiety and depression. You know, anxiety. What is anxiety? The fear of the unknown, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the fear of the unknown is stress. right. uncertainty, right. insecurity, right. all that stuff is stress on the body. And we sometimes we don't know what it is. So let's put a name on it. You know what I mean? It's stress, anxiety,
in general,
fear, all of it in general. So whenever you, I don't care whichever one of those components that you're feeling, you feel what I'm, either way it go, that's what you're doing to yourself. So it's like, how do I draw back from that? Now, me, I'm a Christian. I love Jesus. He heard my cry. So I don't have an issue with holding on to those promises. You know, those right. promises of him saying that he my provider. Those promises of him saying that he my healer, that, you know, he my peace of mind and cast my cares on him. That's what I do for myself. But even with me doing that, spiritually, in the physical, I'm making sure that I'm reading. I'm making sure that I'm not hanging out with people that I know mean me no good. Or even hanging out with people that's not progressing in life. Mm-hmm. You hanging out with all that, you start cutting that stuff out of life, and not even on the, oh, well, you know, that I've been partners with them ever since we was 5 years old, and how can I leave my friend behind? Because it's killing you. And they literally. Mean more than, you know, they mean more to you than you, your health. You can come back and say hi to people. You can see them in passing. But don't become so dependent on other people to where you can't sit back and say, you know what? I cannot continue. I know for a fact I want to drop 20 pounds. But my friends want to go out for pizza, wings, and beer every other day. Right. And I know that I ain't got no money.
Right.
But mm-hmm. do I just not go with my friends? No, you don't go with your friends. Because number one, you don't have no money. Stay home and cook. That's the most logical thing to do. Mm-hmm. Number two, you want to lose weight. That means you should probably go work out instead of going eating food that's going to make you heavy.
Exactly. That's, messing with chicken and beer. Beer itself will get you big.
You feel me? So it's our decision-making also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throw that decision-making out there. Let's not act like we don't hang around. We ain't got that crab in the barrel complex.
Yeah.
Because it's real.
And I mean, you know? And it is real. And I think, you know, us trying to see the better in people, sometimes we don't acknowledge it. Why this person always commenting on what you're doing negatively? Even if they say it in a playing way. It's some truth in that. Like, dang, bro, like, you really pay a lot of attention to what I do and how I do it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I mean, we need to notice those type of things. And I mean, take time for yourself and really realize what you like, though.
Mm-hmm.
What do you like? What type of things make you happy in the privacy of your home?
You yes. better preach.
Yes. Thank you. Bringing up your own peace of mind, your sanctity. Because that matters. And a lot of people do not understand that they matter. You know? And they don't know that they matter because since childhood, they've been taught that they did matter.
Exactly. Or that it's you know? About somebody else.
And it's about somebody else.
Whether
you feel
it
what
was
I'm saying?
A sibling or whether it was a parent. I grew up with, you know, a sick parent in my house. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, it wasn't about me. My mom was awesome. But in my head, I always knew she primary, though. It's not about me.
Yeah.
So I had trouble as an adult making things about me. I always give. You know what I'm saying? You straight.
Yes.
You straight. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I love that. And then I don't mean to delve in, but I just gotta ask, right? Just even with you knowing that, when it came down to, you know, in relationships with people and stuff like that, how did that work out?
I mean, it really came up to me doing a lot of giving it till I really realized that I was losing myself in it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and I think it took a couple people to tell me, like, bro, like, are you good? And then, thank like, you. In my head, I'm thinking, like, damn, you don't think I'm good?
Mm-hmm.
I thought
right?
I was fine.
I get up, I put my clothes on every day, I take a shower.
But then, when you get that privacy, though, it's kind of like, dang, bro.
You reevaluate some things.
You know what I'm saying?
You know,
and
like,
you got
you
people that genuinely care, though. Because you got to have some people that genuinely care. I remember private situation, but I remember I was graduating grad school and I was driving from one part of Alabama to another like every week, and it was just a lot going on. And I remember my mom came from my graduation and I'm driving with her and she like, "Are you all right?" I'm like, "What you talking about? I'm fine. I'm tired, you know what I'm saying? But I'm good." She like, "Bruh, you look like you ready for a nervous breakdown." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "What?" But you know what I'm saying? I'm just grinding. Yeah. But in reality, I'm beating myself to death.
You burning out.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it takes that self-realization to be like, man, like, you not being lazy, bruh, by laying in the bed on a Saturday.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? That's your time. You and Netflix, bruh, that's your time. If that's what you enjoy, somebody wanted to get up and run. If you wanted to sit up and watch Dear White People from Saturday to Sunday, that's your right, because on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you the main person they talking to at work.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Or whatever. Or you got to grind this out. You got to do this for that person. But that's your self-care. Whatever that is, it's okay. And you don't have to worry about what other people got to say about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's okay for you to have self-care. I love that. Self-care. You feel me? Self-care. If it's one thing that I'm noticing, y'all, is that literally from childhood, infancy, all the way up to adulthood, we continuously need the same things. That's right. Support, right? That's a healthy life,
right?
You know what I mean? As far as like relaxation, making sure I get my food, my necessities, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. And honestly, the third one, I ain't came up with that yet, but I mean, that support and that nutrition, them two right there is what I'm saying is the only thing that I see that we need the most
support has a couple things wrapped into it. Love, empathy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People to care genuinely about you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
People to be about situations.
I feel like that third one, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I feel like that third one can be that social interaction though. Like, I feel like we as adults or we as humans need that social interaction, like that social interaction, not on like social media as far as like, you know, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and all that. I mean, like actual social interaction, like speaking, like, you know, talking to someone, having a conversation, a deep conversation with someone, actually going on to a date, not both of y'all on y'all phones, you know, looking at Facebook or looking at Instagram. Y'all actually talking, you know, that social interaction.
Yes. Yes. You know, like we weren't born in the families for no reason. Right. You know what I mean? Like, right. You are so correct. We do need that social interaction. But I know I gotta throw this out here. This is just me. When it comes to those social interactions, a lot of us, it all goes back to it. Us being able to form these relationships. You know, like, you gotta be able to form a relationship. A lot of people, it's hard for them to get in relationships with people because they don't even know how to say, "I'm sorry."
Uh-huh.
Or forgiveness is just totally out the window.
Right.
So because I can't forgive the last person that did something to me, I'm on edge and on guard about anybody that comes within my midst.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm such on guard, I make people not even want to be around me because I'm so negative.
Right.
Or I'm guarded or I deliberately do things for you not to come around me. That goes back to those attachments. I don't know if y'all know about this study about Mary Ainsworth, right?
Insecure
and the secure attachment.
Yeah. What's that? Break it down.
This woman, Mary Ainsworth, back in like the 70s, if I'm not mistaken,
she did an
experiment called Strange Situation, right? And in the strange situation, she came up with three different types of attachments. An attachment is an emotional connection that is between two people, right? I don't know. They say it in the hood a lot, you know, when a girl start getting really emotional and the guy ain't really feeling like that, he'd be like, "Oh, you starting to get attached," right? Not really understanding that he talking about something real. Like, you're right. I am starting to get emotionally intertwined with you, right? Uh-huh. So with that being said, in the study, basically this is what happened. They put, you know, they have a child in the room with his mama, right? And then and the mama and the kid be playing with a toy or whatever. And then a stranger will walk in the room, and while the kid is engaged in the toy, the mama would get up and walk out the room, right? While the kid wasn't paying attention. So when the kid looked up and noticed that it was somebody else in the room, which is the stranger and not my mama. Now, when they from that, they got three different reactions, right? And that's how they came up with the secure and the insecure. So the kid that was secure, they were able to hold their composure, right?
Their positive, their love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Because they knew that they mama was going to come back, right? Mm-hmm. They call that object permanence. I know that the object is still there even though I can't see it, right? Mm-hmm. So the secure attached kid was able to, you know, hold his composure. It remained calm and it continued on. When the mama returned, it did show that it was excited that the mama came back, but the kid was still able to be independent on his own, right? Mm-hmm. Now, when it came to the insecure attached children, they had two different types, which is the ambivalent attachment and the avoidant attachment, right? The ambivalent attached kid got so mad. It became disruptive. It was throwing stuff. It was just really, really disturbed that the mama had left them, right? When the mother came back, do you know, have you ever seen a kid when the mama pick it up, it be hitting her, mm-hmm. but then it's still crying and don't want her to put it down? Mm-hmm. We call that ambivalent, right? Uh-huh. So when the mama came back, it attacked the mama and it was so mad, like, why would you leave me? But then it held on to the mama tight, like, don't ever leave me again, right? Ambivalent. I love you, but then I don't, but then I hate you, side to side, right? And then we will call that wishy-washy. But then they had the purely avoiding kid, and the avoiding kid literally it just kept on doing rejected. What it was doing. It was so unloved, so rejected that it literally just didn't care if the mama came back or not. They said that this kid, and it wasn't nothing but 5 years old. Think about that. They said that this baby, that avoiding kid literally expected, it reacted as if it expected for the mama not to come back.
Exactly.
You feel what I'm saying? So you
it
got
prepared
one,
for it to keep was, themselves from hurting.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So think about that in a grown-up. Think about how many of us are literally dealing with insecure attached people every day. Insecure attached ambivalent. Insecure attached avoidant. So that's how you get some females who, or some men that are in relationship with women that when they get upset with them, they just shut down and stop talking at all.
Angry, you know, confused, unloved, rejected.
Right? All exactly. And all those feelings go, it start from infancy. When I cried, my mama didn't reply to me right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or let's go back for those parents who want to leave out real quick, but they don't want to say bye to the kids. So they don't want to get mad. So the mama just leave. And when the baby come around looking for it, it can't find their mama. Now you get an ambivalent attached kid because I don't know if she coming back. She didn't even give me the courtesy of saying bye.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know? So then when she does come back, it's so mad.
Just go like, look at her.
Why would you do that to me? Now that's it's now they beating her up. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's just
they're
like
angry.
Angry. So that's those are the three attachments. And in all actuality, we seeing this play out every day in the adult. So literally, when we see that type of behavior in the kid, they like literally systematically. Did y'all know that? Systematically, they automatically think that kid right there is gonna have some type of mental disorder by the time it get like 14.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what the statistics are saying. Do you know that at first it used to be fifth grade, but they taking third grade standardized testing and they use a nose test to see how many gels they need to project their gel manufacturing. How many gels am I going to build according to these 3-year-old IQ tests?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, these third grade IQ tests.
Mm-hmm.
So we got work to do, people.
Man, we do. And man, we've been on for about an hour and 20 minutes. So we gonna roll it down. You know what I'm saying? And maybe we could kind of get a part two going or something like that, man, at another date, man. But this has been so excellent. I know this is gonna be it's going to be the talk of the town, man, because it's like it really just gets on the fact that while we talking about these kids and how they act, and we could really understand that this is a full connection of life. You know what I'm saying? From children to adults, and it doesn't really change much because a lot of people have been in these situations that we talked about, but this conversation started in child development.
Right. And it's we finish in lifespan development from birth to death.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, all these situations are relevant. So I mean, if you guys want to, you know, drop Instagrams, Twitters, anything, this is the time. You guys have been so excellent, so excellent. I thank you guys for contributing. You guys are so awesome. I knew you guys were awesome before y'all got on, and man, it just went sky high again, man. I love y'all both so much. Y'all so bomb.
Oh, well, I just have a Facebook for now, just Floressa Wilson or Floressa Sunshine Wilson. That's my Facebook, and I usually do videos, especially if it's about like maybe a study that I've come across. If y'all know, I talk a lot about studies because, you know, statistics, it's the facts. We can't really say it ain't happening, right?
Right.
So that's just usually what I go off of. I love to take, you know, the scholarly articles and break them down to let or bring more information to the people, let them know exactly what it is happening. And then beyond that, though, I have a YouTube channel that's coming called The Wilson Logic. It's all together, The Wilson Logic. And yeah, check me out there.
That's going to be so popping. Can't wait.
Well, this is Latitris. TT for short. I don't have any social media currently, but if you need to contact me or reach me, you just can, you know, tell Quentin and go on Quentin's social media pages. He has quite a few, and you can contact me that way.
All right.
So, episode 3, Papa Politics. It was great. See y'all soon.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.